From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, demonic spirits. Here's what's happening. The Chinese province at the center of the coronavirus outbreak reported a record spike in deaths, bringing now the total number to more than 1,300 people globally, as the experts are warning the epidemic could create havoc in less prepared countries. Health officials in Hubei announced an additional 242 deaths, 14,840 cases of the virus, known officially as COVID-19, as of Thursday morning there in China, the largest single-day rise since the epidemic began and almost 10 times the number of cases confirmed the previous day. As we reported last week, the U.S. military has disclosed a more than 50% jump in cases of traumatic brain injury stemming from Iran's missile attack on a base in Iraq last month, with the number of service members diagnosed climbing now to over 100 people. A lot of these injuries were caused from the missile concussion that sent sound beaming down on these soldiers. Let's check in with resident psychiatrist Dr. Peter Breggin on this. Peter, this is serious business, isn't it?
Excuse me, George. Yes, it's very serious. It's very common in wars. Afghanistan estimates were that 15 to 20% of all the military had, you know, in combat, had concussions. So very, very common. And it's worse in confined spaces, rooms or trucks. And I think these soldiers were in confined spaces, perhaps in shelters, underneath barracks that were bombed. And it's often missed, even in hospitalizations. And relevant to what's happening in the news, it's also often delayed.
Mm-hmm. Like this was.
Yeah, this very well may have been missed and or delayed. And just for your folks to understand, for our audience, concussions are mild traumatic brain injuries. That's how they're classified. They're traumatic brain injuries. And it's similar in many ways to concussions that you hear about, you know, from car accidents and football or boxing. One of the parts that's very puzzling that we don't understand very well is that there's a primary blast injury without flying objects, without your head snapping or jerking, all of which can cause concussions. You can get it just from the overpressurization, the wave. And it tends somehow to produce hemorrhages or swelling of the brain, twisting of the blood vessels, twisting of the neurons.
Will the brain, Peter, repair itself?
Well, over time it will, but it's confusing because, you know, in the beginning you get the headaches, the dizziness that everybody knows about, but then you start getting fatigue and poor concentration, and that begins lethargy, depression, anxiety, psychiatric symptoms, difficulty with impulses, and that happens over time. And one thing that you'll hear from me that just about no one else is going to tell you is that it's not only hard to tell these traumatic brain injuries from post-traumatic stress disorder, so it gets complicated in diagnosing, but then if they put the soldiers on antidepressants, they have all the same side effects as the post-traumatic stress disorder and the TBI, including like concentration and problems, lethargy, depression, anxiety, hostility, loss of impulse control. So it's a very important, complicated, and hard to diagnose. And the VA doesn't want to the military didn't want to overdiagnose it because they want the soldiers to go back to combat, or in the VA, they don't want to give them disability. And I've been involved in cases like this, George, you know, as a medical expert on behalf of soldiers and vets hurt like this. And I've even written a book chapter on it for lawyers.
Well, the damage, Peter, from this missile attack is obviously much more considerable than they've reported. Peter, thank you. Peter's website, Breggin, BREGGIN.com. Tesla Motors is recalling 15,000 Model X SUVs because of a potential issue that can lead to a loss of power steering assist that could make steering harder and increase the risk of a crash. President Trump has attacked the judge presiding over his friend and advisor Roger Stone's criminal case, Stone was found guilty last year of lying to Congress, witness tampering, and obstructing a House investigation. The Department of Justice recommended he receive 7 to 9 years in prison. But after President Trump tweeted on Tuesday morning that this was a miscarriage of justice, the Department of Justice suddenly reversed course, calling the recommendation grossly disproportionate. And Attorney General William Barr has agreed to testify before the House Judiciary Committee next month, giving them a forum to press the Attorney General on the sentencing of Roger Stone and other controversies that have emerged in the aftermath of President Donald Trump's impeachment trial. Let's check in with the online columnist, Dr. John Curtis. John, I got to ask you, are they gearing up for another impeachment process?
Well, it sure looks that way. But, I mean, you know, we look at the Democrats, total failure right now. I mean, you know, they were beaten at impeachment. They were beaten at Russian collusion. They're in utter chaos right now. I mean, their presidential, race and their candidates completely flipped upside down right now. The anointed one, the front runner, Biden, is now running behind Bernie Sanders. Amy Klobuchar is, like, taking the lead. They don't know where they're going. So what are they doing? They're basically engaged in a strategy in order to tear Trump down more by Chuckie Schumer out there, you know, talking about the improprieties, getting all these statements from people. There's no impropriety here that's going on at the Justice Department. What the impropriety is that they engaged in a witch hunt for 3.5 years. They spent $40 million on the Mueller investigation. They got nothing from that. They got nothing from impeachment. And now they're making a mountain out of a molehill. And what's happening behind the scenes is that there's a U.S. attorney in Connecticut who's going to potentially off in a grand jury meeting that's going to be indicting perhaps James Comey, the former FBI director, Andrew McCabe, Strzok, Lisa Page, and all these characters for engaging in a conspiracy to overturn the U.S. government. Now, you tell me, where's the justice here? They're talking about Roger Stone, who was engaged in nothing, basically. They implicated Jerome Corsi also in this. They had to do with some phony thing with WikiLeaks and supposedly lied. Well, how do you lie to somebody or perjure yourself when the entire investigation was fraud to begin with? So, of course, they want to mitigate the sentence for justice purposes.
Why didn't the president just let him, you know, get the sentencing and then pardon him later?
Well, I mean, I think that it's an outrage for Barr to allow this, to have four of Mueller's investigators, continued investigators, pressing charges against Roger Stone for maximum sentencing. That's what's unfair. And so I think they're going to get it right. And I think everything else is just politics.
Interesting. All right, John, thanks for the comments. Common estimates for global food waste are too low, according to Dutch researchers, who suggest every person in the world is wasting about 500 calories of food a day. Going extra light at the grocery store, cutting down on medical supplies, buying clothing and household supplies secondhand. These are just some of the many ways Americans are making it work when money is tight. And for about a third of Americans, this is a regular financial stress. 32% running out of money before their next paycheck, according to a new survey of U.S. adults working at companies with over 500 employees. One-third of the Americans running out of money. Somebody who's not running out of money is Jeff Bezos from Amazon. He just plunked down $165 million for a house in Los Angeles. That is a record for the Los Angeles area. He bought it from a media mogul. $165 million for a house. That's a lot of things sold on Amazon, I'll tell you that. Up next, what about the possibilities that we could get hurt and hit by an asteroid? Mike McCoy joins us. His work, Asteroids Bridge to Nowhere, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you for the next couple hours. We're going to talk about the threat of asteroids. Mike McCoy with us, international businessman, entrepreneur. He has traveled extensively and worked in the consumer electronics industry for more than 25 years, has written a book called Asteroids Bridge to Nowhere. Mike, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you very much, George. I'm happy to be here.
Now, tell me, how did you get interested in asteroids?
Well, I've always, you know, been kind of a tech science geek, and I had a book idea, and to write the book, I had to do a lot of research, and so, you know, I spent a lot of time researching and studying asteroids.
And sadly, you probably found out that it's not a matter of if we'll get hit, but when.
Exactly. It's actually very frightening. It could happen at any time.
Now, this book is a novel, but it's really based on a lot of fact and truth behind it, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I worked very hard on making everything as real as possible. It's, you know, it's an entertaining, maybe scary adventure, but, you know, everything from the asteroid impacts in the book, I used a website from Purdue University called Impact Earth to simulate the asteroid impacts and craters and things, and the places are real, things like that. So I really worked hard to make it as accurate as possible.
We'll be talking about many possibilities that things we can do to try to avert getting hit. But do you think government would disclose to us at all, Mike, that an asteroid was coming this way if one was?
If one was coming and it was going to create disaster, I really wonder. I think not. But the bigger problem is they might not even know it's coming.
That's true. It's very possible. You know, years ago, I was doing some asteroid hunting myself with their near-Earth tracking program, and many times the asteroids they find have already zoomed past the planet.
That's right, yeah. You know, all the asteroids that they find are cataloged on one place called the Minor Planet Center, and you can Google, you know, and look for all the asteroid near passes and flybys, and almost half of them they discover after they've passed us, or other times they find them, discover them a day before.
And a lot of times they're amateur astronomers who spot these.
Yes, yep, a lot. And anybody that spots or thinks they can spot an asteroid can report it to the Minor Planet Center.
Which...
And you might even get an asteroid, you know, accredited to your name.
What's the percent of these near-Earth asteroids that are coming from the asteroid belt as opposed to outside of the solar system?
Well, they're all from inside the solar system.
Okay.
And very few from the asteroid belt. The asteroid belt is probably pretty stable. They are asteroids that have been floating around space. And, you know, it's 93 million miles just to the sun. And... you know, how many years did Voyager take before it finally left our heliosphere? 20 years or so?
Yeah,
so
now it's way out there.
Our solar system is enormous, and so there's lots of rocky bodies floating around in space, and as a friend from JPL once told me, there's a lot of space in space. So there's a lot of things out there, and the problem with asteroids is that they're usually black as coal.
In your research, Mike, did you scare yourself just trying to uncover these stories about asteroids?
Yeah, it was pretty frightening. I tried to, you know, educate in the book, but also make it entertaining about, you know, one character in the book says, you know, we're flying blind. We're flying through the solar system. We're rotating the Milky Way galaxy, and we can't see where we're going.
That is scary. Now, in your novel, you've got an asteroid storm bombarding the planet. That's dangerous. And one of the danger things, too, is if a big asteroid's coming this way and we blow it up, we could be sending pieces all over the place.
Yes, and actually there's that scenario in the book as well. They have to use a planetary defense weapon to blast an asteroid that's going to decimate Earth. And I guess you'd have to read the book to find out how well that works out. But yes, if you can either try to push an asteroid into a different orbit or a different path, or you can blow it up. And so there's obviously risk there, you know. But if it comes out as 100 pieces or chunks, it's probably going to cause less damage than one large asteroid.
Well, a big one could be a planet killer, couldn't it?
Yes. And a planet killer doesn't have to be that big. You know, a 1 kilometer diameter asteroid, 3,280 feet in diameter, can cause global disruption.
Now, the one that took out the dinosaurs, that was about 6 kilometers?
I think they said 6 or 7 miles, I think. It's a very large
that's huge.
Down there in Yucatan. Yeah, that's huge.
And if it's iron, it doesn't break up. It's just boom.
That's right.
That's dangerous. Right. Now, how many asteroids has our near-Earth tracking program tracked?
Well, I'm looking at the Minor Planet Center website right now, and we have tracked 932,000 and a few more near-Earth objects.
932,000?
Yes.
My God. That's almost as many as the satellites we have going around the planet.
Just about. and we found 4,000. And near-Earth objects are both asteroids and comets. And they are anything, near-Earth is considered anything between about 1.3 AU, so a little bit past the distance between Earth and the sun. And so 932,000 of those, and there were almost 5,000 discovered just last year, and 440 discovered already in 2020.
What has been, of recent times, if you know, the closest an asteroid has come to the planet without hitting it, obviously?
Well, last July 25th, there was an asteroid called 2019 OK, and it was discovered one day before it passed Earth. Past Earth at an altitude of 40,000 miles.
That's close.
That's close. Now,
that's
consider
close.
That our...
Five times within the distance of the moon, for crying
yes,
out loud.
Yes, it's very close between... Anything that passes between Earth and the moon is very close. 40,000 miles, consider that our telecommunication satellites have an altitude of 22,000 miles.
Can't our gravity pull these in as well?
Yes. Yes, and I forgot the term there. If it gets close enough... I forgot what it's called, but there, yes, it can pull them in. And so something that gets closer than that, and it had enough mass, then it could be getting pulled into Earth. And the problem is, you know, 2019, okay, nobody saw it coming. And it's 427 feet in diameter. That is a city killer.
What's the one that they say is going to get close to us in 2036 or something like that? Apophis?
2029, I think, is... Bennu?
There's another one called Apophis.
Apophis is, I think, 2029 is Apophis. And one Russian scientist says it will impact, but, you know, it's up for debate.
Oh, geez. That's kind of frightening, isn't it?
It is. It is. And, you know, and the problem is we, you know, one NASA scientist was quoted saying, even though there's been a program to find 90% of asteroids 450 feet or larger, there's two-thirds of them we still haven't found.
Can they pinpoint, when they finally realize it's coming this way, can they pinpoint where it's going to hit so they could say, look, Istanbul, get out of Turkey right now, you've got 2 days, or something like that?
I think it's very difficult. They can estimate. You know, a week ago, two satellites were supposed to collide, and luckily they missed. And on the news, they were talking about...
It was a Chinese satellite, wasn't it? Was one of them?
I think it was Chinese and an American one. They said, watch out, Philadelphia. So I think they had a fairly good clue. But, you know, the trajectories are hard to trace and track. There are two different software programs running at JPL, one called Sentry that's trying to track everything that the Minor Planet Center has found, and another one called Scout, which is really looking for the hazardous asteroids.
Are we looking for asteroids on a regular basis?
Yes. You know, there are some land-based telescopes, and then there are the, you know, astrology clubs and private people. But remarkably, we only have one space telescope that is looking for asteroids. And unfortunately, it's going out of service mid-2020, and it's doing this work, and it wasn't even designed to do this work. It's a repurposed space telescope.
We're going to come back in a moment and talk with Mike McCoy about the threat of asteroids to the planet and also a planetary defense system. What can we do if one is heading this way? His book is called Asteroids Bridge to Nowhere. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And we will take calls next hour with Mike McCoy as we talk about asteroids. His book is called Asteroids Bridge to Nowhere. And we'll talk about what we can do to fight one if it's coming this way. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with Mike McCoy, as we talk about his work, Asteroids Bridge to Nowhere. Mike, can you tell us about the Near-Earth Objects Tracking Program through NASA? What are they doing on a regular basis for us?
Well, it's primarily JPL that's tracking. So they get their information from the Minor Planet Center, and they use two different programs. One is called Sentry, and they work to track the orbit of the Near-Earth objects, and they're watching them all the time. And then objects that they deem hazardous are being watched by another program called Scout. So they're always watching. They're always looking for all the objects that they've found. The problem is they haven't found all of them. In fact, they haven't found most of them, probably.
That's scary. Now, what's the difference between a meteorite and an asteroid?
Well, an asteroid is an object that's out in space. A meteorite is actually the piece of the meteor, the asteroid, as it's coming in, it's a meteor. When it hits the ground and it's a rock that you find on the ground, it's a meteorite.
And those could be baseball size, pebble size, just about anything.
Yes, or larger. I mean, I saw one this summer in the Czech Republic. It was actually up in this kind of shrine in this church, and it was almost 2 feet in diameter.
We've got an astronomer, Mike, that comes on weekly. His name's Dr. Sky. And he has told us that a meteorite, the size of a grain of sand, can create that glow in the sky.
Yes. Yeah. So
it's amazing.
A lot of times when we have a comet pass nearby, like Halley's Comet, or the we have these meteor storm meteor events, it's just a grain of sand or a small little rock. But every night, people don't realize that Earth is constantly under attack. Every night, there are thousands of meteoroids larger than a grain of sand, a small rock, maybe a foot or two in diameter, that creates a fireball. And just a few weeks ago over Los Angeles, there was a fireball in January. People spotted one on the East Coast, and there are actually thousands a day. We just don't see them because they're coming during the day, not just the night, and a lot of them are over the ocean.
Are we going to wake up one morning and find out that a city's been taken out by an asteroid that hit?
It's very likely. The event in 2013 over Chelyabinsk, Russia, was a complete surprise.
You had a lot of people injured from that, too.
Yes, about 1,200 people injured. It exploded in the atmosphere, and with a force of 470 megatons. So there was quite an airburst, and that's what broke all the windows and injured people.
Is there a procedure by NASA and JPL to notify us? And if so, what's the procedure?
Well, I read an article recently, and it had 5 steps that NASA and FEMA would work together to have this process. So the first step is a text goes out to no more than 12 scientists. I don't know why only 12. And that's step one. Step two, they would track the asteroid's path. Step three, they determine the size and the time of impact. And then step four, they would confirm with FEMA that the impact is inevitable. And then step five, NASA and FEMA issue a joint public statement, and they would address how they would protect Earth.
Do we have a missile in place right now that could be launched at any time to hit an asteroid? We don't have one.
No.
Does the planet have one?
No.
We should.
You would think we would. Do you know that the planetary defense budget of the United States is $150 million? City of Los Angeles is spending a lot more than that just on homeless people.
Jeez. Well, we should spend more on homeless. That's a horrible
situation.
Well,
we should, but $150 million a year to defend Earth.
Why don't we have Russia, China, and every nation that has gone into space have rockets ready to go in any moment to hit an asteroid if need be.
You would think we would, but I think, you know,
through the United Nations, we should do something.
We should. But we are going to have the very first planetary defense mission. It's called DART, and that stands for Double Asteroid Redirect Test. And it is the very first test to actually bump into an asteroid and try to move it.
You ever see Los Angeles traffic during rush hour? So during an evacuation, can you imagine what it would be like? Nobody would get out.
That's right. Yeah, nobody would get out. If there was a disaster, you know, what I question is, on this five-step plan from NASA and FEMA, step five is making a public announcement. Maybe they would just skip step five and not tell us.
And if there's an asteroid storm, as you have in your book, it keeps coming over days. It's not just a one-moment event, is it?
That's right. Asteroids are coming from one direction in space, and as the Earth turns, you know, you're getting hit each day. And in the book, it's each night there's an asteroid storm.
We talk a lot on the program, Mike, about preparedness, about preparing with food and water and shelter. Can you really prepare against an asteroid strike?
I think if you know where it's going to land, don't be there.
No. Good advice.
Don't be there. You know, but there are a lot of concepts for planetary defense. We just haven't gotten to them yet. And, you know, I think that it's either, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind, or governments are just incompetent. In my reading, I was discovering that, you know, in 2013, the Russia meteor exploded, and it's February 2013, and then September 2013, wouldn't you know that they reactivated this space telescope and repurposed it for looking for asteroids. And then this July, when 2019 OK almost bumped into us, in September 2019, after many years of planning and discussion, our government finally fully funded a new space telescope called NEOCAM that may launch as early as 2025. So that we're reacting to things. We're not planning ahead. We're doing these knee-jerk reactions.
Deep Impact was an asteroid movie. Yours very well could be turned into a movie, your book. But I think in that movie, we had an underground facility made for a certain amount of people, and that the masses found out about it, Mike, and they wanted in.
Yes.
And I think the president said, no, you can't go in. And, I mean, it was heartbreaking, and it was sad. But all of a sudden, they decided, we're going to open it up to everybody, let everybody in, we're going to save the planet. And they did something like that. Do we have underground shelters for asteroid strikes for the elite and those, you know, types of folks?
Well, I would imagine on your show that topic's come up a few times.
It does come up.
You know, so I imagine we do. And, you know, in my story, there's a secret part of the, you know, part of the government knew the asteroid storm was coming. They kept it secret, and they built underground cities for their select few. And they kept it, they worked very hard to keep the whole thing secret, and they worked very hard when the asteroid storm was happening to not let people in and keep them out. They weren't as good-hearted as the president in the movie you talked about.
I heard that if they beamed a laser at the asteroid, that the heat from the laser could push the asteroid out of the way. Have you heard of that?
Yes, it's called laser ablation, and it actually is it's been bandied about quite a bit. There's been some studies and things like that. You would have to have a spacecraft, you know, up near the asteroid and be powered by solar panels and things like that, and shoot a laser at it and try to vaporize or, you know, remove part of the mass of the asteroid. And if, you know, if it's strong enough and the mass isn't too big of the object, you might be able to inch it, you know, a little bit through space, but it would take a long, long time to actually move it. It might take years.
It might be. We're going to take calls next hour with Mike McCoy about asteroids and the threat of asteroids. It is something that we don't think about on a daily basis, but the threat is always there, Mike, isn't it?
It is. It is, very much so.
How have we been lucky enough to dodge this bullet?
Well, we've been lucky enough in our scheme of time, but Earth has been hit many, many times. And, you know, look at a meteor crater over in Arizona. It's a mile across.
Look at the moon. I mean, the moon was pocketed in its formation.
The moon. So it's just a matter of time. I mean, NASA says it's a very low risk, and we're watching some obvious things. But, boy, if 2019 okay would have hit somewhere, it would have been a regional disaster.
Aren't we helped out because of Jupiter? Doesn't Jupiter suck some of these in?
Yes, it does. Shoemaker-Levy 9, you know, it got that one, and some of the impacts.
Oh, that was amazing to watch.
Yeah, and some of the impacts there were larger than the size of the United States.
I used to know someone who worked at the Near Earth Tracking Center, Eleanor Helene. I don't know if she's still there or not. It's been years since I talked to her. Did you ever come across that name?
No, I haven't.
She might have retired. I mean, we're talking about 15, 20 years ago. What about technology? What kind of technology do we have to try to detect these?
Well, like you talked about laser ablation. So that's a technology, but there's no planned mission yet for that type of, even to test it. So the very first planetary defense test that we have is this object called, the spacecraft called DART. And it will launch in 2021, and it will impact a moonlet about 500 feet in diameter and smash right into it and try to move it. But they're saying that it might...
As a test?
As a test.
Watch it move it right toward us.
Just our luck. These ideas of, you know, lasering things or strapping a rocket onto an asteroid is, you know, who's steering?
That's exactly right. Nobody's steering. That's the problem.
How do you steer an asteroid?
That is the problem. What size asteroid could take out a city, a conventional U.S.-type size city?
Well, NASA did a simulation in 2016 of a 330-foot asteroid that impacted Los Angeles. And it impacted cities, wiped out cities. And we're in a basin. It's pretty flat, you know, for 30 miles.
A 300 to 500-foot asteroid?
330-foot asteroid in their simulation, and it wiped out everything for about 30 miles.
Buildings, everything, just demolished.
Buildings, everything. And I went to, as you know, getting prepared for this, I went to the Impact Earth website from Purdue University, and I input a 500-foot asteroid made of iron, and because I wanted a good blast, and coming in at 15,000 miles per hour, and it created a crater 2.3 miles in diameter, 1,400 feet deep.
Jeez.
And if you were 6 miles away from it, you'd feel an earthquake, about 6.3 earthquake. Chimneys might fall and things, but it's not finished with you yet, because 29 seconds after the impact, one airburst going 1,000 miles an hour will come through and destroy every building, multi-story building.
In its direction, or does it go out all over the place?
All in every direction.
Oh, gosh. And for how many miles out?
That was 6 miles out. If you happen to be 3 miles from the impact center, you'd be buried under 23 feet.
Oh, you'd be gone instantly.
Yeah. And, you know, after that airburst, you don't want to, you know, come outside.
Is there radiation?
No, but
just too much dust.
44 seconds after impact, the ejecta, the mass.
Oh, you couldn't breathe.
Well, it comes out of the crater. It starts falling, and you would have about 3 feet or so of ejecta, but some chunks would be 35 feet big.
And it would be steamy hot too, wouldn't it?
Yes, steamy hot, crushing buildings, cars, and people.
Oh, my gosh. Horrible. And if we ever tried to rebuild, let's say, that area that got hit by a 300-foot asteroid, how long would it take to fill in a 2-mile by 1,500-foot deep crater?
Well, in Los Angeles, we might just turn it into a football stadium.
Or a lake.
A lake or something. Yeah, a new reservoir. It would take a while to fill in that big of a hole.
Jeez. Now, what about odds? What are their odds, their computer odds, say, about the probability of getting hit? 10%, 2%?
But it's very low. I mean, if you ask NASA what's, you know, it's very low, and they say something like the asteroid in Russia might be once every, 100 years, and maybe once every 500 years we might have something that's, the 500-foot size asteroid. So they say it's, very low risk, but in fact, it could happen at any time.
Well, that's right. That in St. Louis in 1993, we had what they call the 500-year flood, which means you get a flood that size once every 500 years. But what they don't say, and what is entirely possible, is let's say you get that 500-year flood. The next year, you could get another one for the next 500 years, but it could come that soon.
That's right. That's right.
That's frightening. So tell us a little bit more about the book.
Well, the book, in the book, the government doesn't tell people the storm's coming.
They hide it. Do you have a celebrity star within the book?
No celebrity star in the book, but we do have our hero, Rick Monday, who is an astrophysicist from Caltech.
He used to be a baseball player, wasn't he?
Was he? Okay.
There was a Rick Monday. I think he used to play for the San Francisco Giants a long time, or Kansas City or something like that. We're talking 20, 30 years ago. Stay with us, Mike. Let's talk more about your work, Asteroids, Bridge to Nowhere, and we'll take phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM.